From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 438, Docker and Server 2016 with guest Taylor Brown. Recorded Thursday, September 3rd, 2015. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is Taylor Brown, who's an expert in Microsoft virtualization technologies, most notably Hyper-V and Windows containers, the shiny new Windows containers. He's been a member of the Windows Core virtualization team since 2003, where he's currently principal program manager, focusing on Windows Server containers and Hyper-V containers. Welcome, sir.
Thanks for having me.
I'm super excited about this. I mean, I used virtualization back when it was a VMware product for testing, you know, back when it was not fast. It wasn't about speed. It was about being able to reset. I was fighting DLL hell. So yeah. Could I roll back my machine to the state before the install, then run the install, figure out what went wrong, make some changes, roll it back, do it again. Ah, the good old days. So, yeah. And it sounds like you're an old timer too. 2003, that's the early days of virtualization.
Yeah, I mean, I actually got interested in virtualization when, before Microsoft had acquired ConnectX, Eric Trout came and did a presentation to the entire Windows kernel team. And at that point, I was working on power management and showed off this virtual machine technology. And like you, I looked at it, I was in testing at the time and went, wow. If we could just use that to like simulate some stuff, that would be great. I could actually get rid of these old machines and, you know, my life would be so much better.
Yeah, we were living with keeping old hardware alive somehow. And I was using imaging tech and using Ghost and things, but this was way better.
Oh, definitely. Yep. And then when we acquired ConnectX, right after that, I joined the team and I haven't left. Yeah, they can't pry me away.
Well, and I have nothing bad to say about Hyper-V. It feels completely grown up these days. Like, it's just a product that works. I think about it about as much as I think about like a network stack. It's just stuff you use every day. It's fine.
Yeah. And by and large, I mean, that's a part of the way that this team has functioned and operated. You know, we started off with Hyper-V V1 and we knew that there was going to be some features that we just didn't have that people wanted. But we felt it was really, really important to have a high quality foundation to build on. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we focused on. And then over the subsequent releases, we just layered on, you know, all of those features that people needed, while still maintaining that core, and solid foundation. And I really think that's part of why I love this team so much is that the commitment to quality and just delivering great technology, is super, super strong.
So. Yeah, I mean, and you know, my ultimate manifestation of that is running these days, the fact that I can just click on a VM and say, you know, go run that over on that host. And I don't even watch anymore. Like I know it'll happen and nobody else will be able to tell. I'm almost sad that used to be voodoo. You ran around the room going, I am a god when that happened. But today that's pretty normal. So
yeah, you know, and much like, much like those days, I kind of feel the same way with, containers now. You know, I got on stage for the first time and showed someone booting basically Windows, showing them starting a new Windows installation on my laptop in a couple seconds. Right. And it's black magic voodoo.
Well, I think a lot of folks are looking at containers and going, this is just lightweight VMs, isn't it? Do you see it that way?
You know, so when I first started looking at it, that's certainly the way I thought about it too. I mean, I come from an IT pro background. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of what it felt like, right? Because I start up a thing and I can, you know, like start many of them on a machine and I can do different stuff in each one of them and they can run at the same time. Yeah, it kind of feels like a VM.
Right.
But, you know, once I started really looking into how people were using it, I realized there's a lot more to it. Hmm. While the core technology kind of feels that way, the things that it empowers and the scenarios that it's driving are kind of far beyond that. They're light years beyond just, hey, it's a lightweight VM.
So what scenario jumps out at you?
The biggest one, and I mean, and you know, and I got to give credit to Docker for, identifying this is the developer life cycle. you know, how quickly they can start with, you know, take some building blocks that are already there and build an application and, you know, test it and then deliver it into production and have it run the same way is phenomenal. It just takes so much of the pain out of the process. You know, and it makes their life a lot easier, but it really also makes the IT life a lot easier. We're not running around trying to figure out why the script to install XYZ failed or why this thing doesn't work in production because it worked on their machine.
Right.
And all of those challenges.
Now, I think back to, I was headed this path with my developers using VMs. We were giving our devs big torquey machines so they could run two or three VMs themselves. We were using that Azure self-service portal, the Windows self-service portal, so that we as the IT folks configure the VM. This is the version of the OS. These are the basic settings and so forth, so that the dev is working from a VM that it looks like production. And it for me, it's just eliminated a whole class of errors. But not a trivial thing to set up. The Windows Azure pack, that is not a small thing to get up and going. And it seemed like overkill for a lot of cases. Do you see this as a simpler solution with Docker?
I mean, I think it actually solves the problem in a different way.
Oh, yeah?
That actually has some other advantages to it as well. I mean, you have a developer, a full VM, and the first thing they do is they go install, you know, the remote debugging tools on it, right?
Yep. They change it. Of course they change it.
Yeah. Then why wouldn't they? They want to be able to debug the thing that they're working on.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't have the debugger installed in the production environment, which you probably don't,
right?
You don't really want to have that extra layer there. Now all of a sudden the environments don't match anymore.
Yeah, the rules are different. So how does a Docker setup protect you from that?
So what it enables is the developer to kind of build the environment in a container image and then run that same container image the exact same way in whatever environment you're in, with all the dependencies that they built into that image.
Okay.
So it's very declarative in that way.
And so in that sense, you're just shipping the debugging tools to production.
Yeah, if they included them that way, you would, but
right.
You don't have to. You can understand what's there, and they can remove the debugging tools.
Right. So
to give you an example,
mm-hmm.
When we did our keynote for the Build conference this year,
yes,
we had this great website that we were using throughout the whole keynote. It was part of the Phoenix project, phenomenal. And we went to deploy that in the containers the first time, and it blew up, just wouldn't run.
Huh.
And of course the team that's helping build all the demos, gets on the phone with me, hey, your container stuff doesn't work. So, we start digging into it. Well, it turns out one of the libraries that site used, actually had another dependency on the MSV, C runtime, the C++ runtime.
Oh, wow.
It wasn't kind of declared at all, wasn't there, but guess what? Every machine they'd been putting it on had Visual Studio or the remote debugging tools on it.
Right, right.
Which installs that C++ runtime.
Yeah, of course.
But it's not part of the OS. So when we ran it in a container,
couldn't find it.
It couldn't find it. It blew up.
Right.
Right.
But this is, I think this is the bigger issue here, is that in order to use containers, you have to have this configuration as code mentality. You have a manifest of everything that goes in that container.
Yeah. And they call it, Docker calls it a Docker file. You could also use PowerShell to script it in.
Right.
But developers are kind of used to that already. They make files. They use,
oh, yeah.
Build configurations, right? And these are relatively straightforward to read and understand. And that's really what they care about is that, hey, let me hit F5, have this thing spin up and run. Now, if we can take that same thing and take that image and give it into production, one, we can see what's in there.
Mm-hmm.
So we can understand, hey, they took a dependency or they're installing this thing that we don't like. We can catch it early and say, hey, this code you're bringing in, we think it's full of viruses or it has some other problem. It doesn't meet our requirements. It's not been, signed off on. We need to go adjust that, which would be hard to do before because they just give you a script to install it and you don't even know.
Yeah, you don't. You really don't know. Or, I've been teasing about the Word doc. Mm-hmm. Here's the Word doc. Click this, then click this, then click this. Make sure you do it in this order.
Yeah. And so now you've got this. Declarative build environment, so you mm-hmm. can build the same thing over again. And then we even showed some automation that we're doing with Visual Studio Online to automatically build that whole environment out every time they make a change or a check-in. So you get this declarative environment, and it runs the same way no matter what machine it's on. So it
right.
runs on their laptop, It runs on their workstation. It runs on the server the same way.
Right. And it's largely platform agnostic too. Like, depending on how you set up your container, you can run it across different OSs if you care to.
Yeah, I mean, generally what ends up happening is you're running it in a virtual machine.
Right. This is very Inception-y then, to have containers inside of VMs.
It is. It really is. And then we even get further with that when we talk about Hyper-V containers.
Right.
Which lever virtualization. And even those can run inside of virtual machines. So now, you know, we've got containers inside of inside of virtual machines that are running on clouds inside of clouds. And yeah.
It's turtles all the way down.
It is.
Talk to me about Hyper-V containers. What's the difference?
So you can think of a Hyper-V container as, and really this is what it is. It's a highly optimized virtual machine that we're building, as well as an optimized installation of Windows that its sole purpose in being is to run a container inside of it.
Okay.
And because we can scope down the requirements to that, we can get away with a lot of virtualization trickery. So, for example, that virtual machine doesn't really need a network adapter at all. All we need is a network adapter in the container.
Okay.
So we can actually bypass some of the virtualization and just pump a network adapter directly into that container. And, you know, those kind of tricks allow us to have the same kind of high speed startup times that we would expect from containers, but we get the isolation benefits of a virtual machine.
Right. And you know, the other thing we learned about from Inception was if you run virtual machines inside of virtual machines inside of virtual machines, things run really slowly. So I think that's always the question when we start talking about this is, how am I maintaining the speed? And I think, you know, you're addressing that head on. It's just like, look, we make this stuff simpler.
Yeah. I mean, we can optimize it for the purpose that it has. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we started building Hyper-V containers out of two necessities. One, we had our own need for it. So we wanted to use containers heavily inside of Azure.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes perfect sense. We've got a bunch of workloads that need to spin up and run for a little while and spin down. But a lot of these things use third-party code.
Right.
Things like Azure Automation, where you're providing a PowerShell script that can do generally whatever it wants. Mm-hmm. You know, and so we really felt that we needed that strong isolation boundary.
Yeah.
So we built it, you know, largely for that reason. But we also started talking to customers and finding out that, gosh, our customers were running one container per VM. So they were getting none of the density benefits. And in fact, they were having to manage two environments. They were managing the VM and they were managing the container.
Right. And really the point is run a group of containers, preferably related to an app, I guess, inside of a VM.
It doesn't even need to be related to an app at the point where you've got that isolation, right? Mm-hmm. It could actually be a container from Coke and a container from Pepsi, a container from one customer, a container from another on the same VM because you've got that level of isolation there.
Right. Well, and this is the big conversation that folks are having around containers is this as secure as the VM technology I know and trust?
Right. And by virtue of using our existing investments in Hyper-V and kind of pulling from that toolbox, it's the same hypervisor. It's the same virtualization platform that they've been using. It's the same virtualization platform that's CEC certified and has gone through rigorous security testing with every release. Mm-hmm. It's the same platform. But we're bringing containers along for the ride. And it's the same tool set.
Yeah, I mean, it looks all familiar, right? I'm looking at TP3 here, this is the latest bits that are out with 2016, and this is totally familiar. Mm-hmm. But maybe now is it a separate operating system per container? I always thought the distinction with a container versus a virtual machine was that we were virtualizing the OS away to keep the footprint smaller.
Yeah, so we're virtualizing, in the case of Windows Server containers, we're virtualizing kind of the kernel. It's a shared kernel across all the containers in the host. But we actually boot a copy of most of the user mode services in the container, because that's what makes Windows is things like the session manager and the common login processes and all of the things that developers and the world's kind of come to use in Windows and leverage.
Right.
So, you know, we do boot those things up. Now we can, you know, share a lot of memory. Especially, you know, private memory bytes. So, you know, we can still get that density. What we get in Hyper-V containers is we do get our own kernel for each container. So they are running their own independent copy of the kernel.
Right.
As well as those services.
on top of everything else. And give me 1 second here to pay the bills, because Run As Radio is brought to you by ScriptRock, the makers of Guardrail, and the fighters of Configuration Drift. Configuration Drift happens in every environment from 5 nodes to 5,000. Guardrail will find and scan the configs of every node in your environment, no matter the platform, and alert you to changes happening across machines. Give it a try for 3 months free with the coupon code RUNASRADIO, all one word, at scriptrock.com/RUNASRADIO. Okay, you said Windows containers. Is there another? I'm just trying to get all the container tech here. So there's Hyper-V containers and Windows containers. Are they different?
So there's Windows Server containers and Hyper-V containers. Okay. Those are the two things we're releasing as part of Windows Server 2016.
All right.
And Windows Server containers are architecturally very similar to what's been done in Linux, where you've got a shared kernel across all the containers.
Mm-hmm.
Hyper-V containers are this virtualization enabled form of the container. And they actually run a Windows Server container inside. So the technologies are completely interchangeable. They're the same. It's going to be the same PowerShell commandlets, the same right. Docker commands to manage both, the same image format across both. So if someone builds a container using Windows Server container runtime, it'll run in a Hyper-V container just fine, or vice versa. So the Hyper-V containers, you know, really become a great deployment option, especially for the IT pro who's kind of running that in their cloud or in their environment.
Yeah, because I'm still not sure I know why you have both or which one I would use.
Yeah, I mean, so the Windows Server containers are generally going to have a better density than Hyper-V containers, because we're sharing that kernel across all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. They may have a little bit faster startup time, because right. we're not having to start another kernel. Hyper-V containers have the advantage of having that strong layer of isolation and the regulatory compliance that comes along with that. So for things like PCI compliance, credit card processing,
right.
where they've put a rule in place that says thou shalt have hardware virtualization, we can check that box with Hyper-V containers.
I get it. Okay. But this is a conversation that I've had before, too. We were talking about, all right, well, I don't trust this app, so I'm going to keep it in a VM and not bother the container. But now I could put it in a Hyper-V container
right.
and use the same tools I've administered everything else with, but with a set of apps that I'm more confident in, that, you know, have a known profile and so forth. Windows containers are a little faster, a little lighter, and I'm not as concerned about them.
Yep. So it's the right tool for the right job.
Okay. And these are all Docker containers in the end. So if I'm a Docker guy, I will recognize these things.
So we're actually, we're building the core technology. That's what my team is mostly mm-hmm. focused on. And then we're actually working in the Docker open source to enable the Docker toolset to be able to manage and configure containers.
Right.
At the same time, we've got a PowerShell experience that we're shipping in the box as part of Windows Server 2016. And then we've got partners like Canonical who are working on an LXD, which is their container tool set. And that's also going to work with Windows containers. They announced that last week.
So that's the Linux hypervisor tools, right? LXD?
Yeah. Well, LXD is actually a container management tool set. LXC has been what most people are familiar with for Linux containers. That was kind of the first Linux container tool set. So Canonical borrowed that name and came out with LXD. And so that, you know, it's effectively a similar tool set to Docker,
okay.
for creating containers, starting containers, managing containers, all of those kind of things.
Well, that sort of speaks to this reality of there are more container solutions. Like there's a bunch of ways to do this. So.
Right. And so, you know, we're super committed to doing this in an open way so that any one of these container solutions, can build on top of our platform and provide that to their customers.
Nice.
Which is part of the reason that we joined the Open Container Initiative under the Linux Foundation, is to, you know, help spearhead and develop this technology across the industry and build some standardization around it so that all of these kind of solutions can have a common container format and common container runtime, no matter what platform they're running on.
This feels like the way virtualization was embraced in the early days, where everybody sort of came together. And I mean, the big initiative was with AMD and Intel, making sure that hypervisors worked at the BIOS level. So this is just the next generation of virtualization as a whole?
I wouldn't even say it's the next generation, because it is virtualization.
Right. It's just more.
It's just a different level of virtualization.
Right.
And, you know, by virtue of that, we're seeing a faster adoption around
mm-hmm.
it.
People get it.
They get it. They see the value of it, you know, and they're a little more comfortable than they even were when virtual machines came around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they kind of realize that, hey, you know, this virtualization technology, while it's doing some stuff that I don't completely understand, it works.
Well, and I think the big thing that folks have battled with around virtualization is that it's not been easy to take the virtual machines that you have on-prem and push them to the cloud. They're different. This mm-hmm. feels like they're the same.
Yep. They very much are. And they run the same way.
Right.
You know, so I can take an environment, and I talk about this with a lot of customers these days.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so I get a consultant in and I just need him to update the website with our latest graphics and, you know, some additional content forms or whatnot. Well, before I had to, you know, get him a laptop and like try to get a copy of the VMs that were running on, or, you know, running the website and put that on his laptop. And then he'd do some work on it. And then I had to figure out how to get those back into production. It's kind of a pain and expensive.
Right.
You know, now I can just give him a script and he can run it on his own laptop and bring the entire environment down, do his work and, you know, give me back the container images and we're done.
Yeah, and you know you're going to be able to deploy it. There's none of that integration problem.
Right, right. And I can see exactly what happened because, you know, if I get the, you know, the Docker files or the PowerShell scripts that are building that, I can, you know, really easily just look at those and go, oh, okay, that's what he's doing.
That's how he did it. Yeah, you see the results of his work in a much clearer way.
You know, I see the things I care about. I don't see the code.
Yeah, you can't see the code, but you can see the configuration.
Right, right.
And you know what pieces he's loaded, you know what additional libraries brought in and so forth. Like, I got to think as an InfoSec guy, the config files are what you're going to live with now. This is your first line of view of what's running in the infrastructure.
Right. And because they're file-based, I can even go a layer deeper and really inspect the, you know, the files and see what changes have been made as part of building that container image.
Yeah, it makes you wonder if this is not going to be a new set of a wave of tools are going to be these manifest inspectors.
Well, we're already seeing some of that happen where, you know, people are going through their Linux container libraries and inspecting, you know, what images are there. And, you know, trying to understand what what they're based on and what kind of dependencies they've taken and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think in Windows, we'll see some of the same stuff, but I think we'll also have some advantages, because the Windows operating system is a common layer, and that's going to come from us. We're going to continue to produce those container images for Windows. You know, customers can at least trust that layer, which is signed by us and issued and pushed from Microsoft properties, that they can trust that layer.
Right. Well, the kernel is the kernel when it comes to Windows. It's more complicated with Linux.
Yeah, and it's not just the kernel. It's also all the services that go on top of that. Are you using Ubuntu? Or are you using Red Hat? Or are you using CentOS? Or are you using, you know, which version of what? And, you know, what libraries did it pull in? Does it have, you know, OpenSSL version this or version that?
Right. And I'm not surprised you poked at OpenSSL because that's something that us InfoSec guys take a big look at, too. There's some bad versions of OpenSSL running around.
Yeah, I mean, there's bad versions of a lot of software.
Sure.
I mean, if you work in software long enough, you know that no matter what company it is, what developer it is, you know, mistakes happen and accidents happen.
Yeah, absolutely. There was, I don't see any malice in what happened with OpenSSL. It's just one of those things that took a while to clean up because it's everywhere.
Right. I mean, that's the hard part is it's been common across so many things, mm-hmm. right?
But if I'm an InfoSec guy and that 0-day drops, like, hey, guys, there's a boundary problem with OpenSSL. If everything's running in Docker containers, the fact that I could easily use a tool to say, sweep across all of my container configs, check which version, give me the list of all the OpenSSL versions we're using. Ah, okay, these are the ones I need to fix. Like, I feel much more powerful now. That's a hard problem to solve until this came along.
Right. And even with Windows, you know, if let's say you're building your images on ASP.NET or something else, and there's a performance fix or a bug,
yep.
or, you know, security, whatever it is, you know, you can easily go spin up a copy of all those containers to check it. You
yep.
can run tools against those containers to check them. Once the fix is deployed, you can run those same containers in a pre-production environment and verify that they're working before you push them in. It just makes a lot of those things considerably easier to do.
Yeah, it's a really interesting idea that I could basically stand up a lockdown VM and fire up some suspicious containers that might have an exploit in them and honeypot them essentially in a very contained environment. No, you know, challenge them and see if they're actually up to anything inappropriate before I go fighting it out in the wild.
there's lots of, I mean, we're building some pretty powerful tooling. I think that's the cool part. You know, as kind of a platform guy, that's what I love to do. I love to build great hammers and great screwdrivers and then see how people go build houses around it.
Yeah, we're going to do stuff you didn't expect.
Yeah, well, then that's great. That's exactly. Fun. Yeah, because it's amazing to see what people do when they're given some cool tools.
Yeah, absolutely. That is really the fun part about that. When the tool, you know, the line with good tool is, if you can't shoot your foot off, it's not that good a tool, right? You know, it's a good tool when you're like, ooh, be careful. Like, there are some hazards here.
Yeah, I mean, there can be. I think, you know, we try really hard to make sure that we, you know, both through, you know, education as well as through, you know, providing good documentation and tools around it, that, you know, we help people avoid the pitfalls.
Yeah.
And that's something else that my team has been really focused on is, you know, change the way we're doing our documentation. Our documentation now for containers is all hosted in GitHub.
Oh, cool.
So anybody can go change the documentation now.
Make a contribution to it.
Yeah, make it better. And we can update it rapidly. So as we're getting forum, you know, questions, we're updating the documentation to help answer those questions.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, it's the same sort of help management system, you know, product support system we've had for years, except now it's all in public. So you don't have to, it's not like you're keeping any secrets and anybody can contribute to it.
Yeah. Well, and if, you know, you find an example that's just a little confusing.
Yeah.
Hey, you know.
Write a better example.
Yeah. Markdown, make a change. We'll review it. We'll accept the PR and it'll go live.
Nice. Yeah, that's an awesome aspect to all of this. I know plenty of folks in the Windows world that are looking at containers with some interest, but they're not thrilled to have to learn a new tool like Docker. So maybe, can we dig a little into the PowerShell side of how do I manage this? DSC a part of the equation?
DSC probably will be. So what we did first for our first step is we actually took most of the PowerShell that we had for Hyper-V, and we kind of, you know, pivoted it towards containers.
Right.
You know, so if you're using Hyper-V,
different.
It's fairly similar, right? Because, you know, as we started this conversation, we talked about how similar, you know, these kind of feel to VMs in many ways.
Yeah.
You know, so we wanted to kind of have that similar feel. And then we kind of started pushing it a little more towards some of the power that containers have. But, you know, it's very similar. You go, you know, new container, create a new container. Start container, starts the container. Stop container, stops the container. And then for interacting with it, we built on top of one of the new features in Windows Server 2016 for VMs, PowerShell Direct, which allows us to directly connect to a remote PowerShell session inside of the VM over our VM bus protocol.
So what's the steps to get that container to the point where there's PowerShell running in it so I can start doing those commands?
New container, start container, enter PS session with the container. three commandlets.
So you're saying is when the container stands up, PowerShell is there.
Oh, yeah. Ready to go.
No, you know, that's an interesting piece of voodoo right there. It's like, how do I get to the point where I can communicate with this thing, which is was a battle with VMs.
Well, and we just fixed it for VMs, too.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. So in Server 2016 now, with a Server 2016 or a Windows 10 VM, you can say, enter PS session and the VM, and we'll give you a PowerShell session to that VM as well.
That's all I need, man. If PowerShell is there, when that thing lights up, then I could do the rest.
Yeah, PowerShell Direct.
Yeah, PowerShell Direct saves a lot of pain. No two ways about that. I'm just sad that it's Windows 2016 because it's still 2015.
Yeah. Well, let's start playing with it in the preview. I mean, one of the things that we're really, you know, asking the community for right now, especially for PowerShell, is give us some feedback on it.
Sure. Are these the commands you want to do?
Yeah, we know that we don't have it all perfect right now.
Right.
We actually purposely kind of left it a little imperfect so that we could figure out, you know, how do people want us to you know, build these commandlets? Is this the right set? Is it the wrong set? Should we tweak it this way or that way? So one of the PMs on my team, that's been his main job for the last couple of weeks is just looking at those forum requests, talking to people and asking the question, hey, is this how you want to see it?
Just getting a sense of the direct of sort of the opinioned approach to how you would want to set up a container and manage them.
Right. You know, and trying to make sure that we're building what our customers really want out of this technology.
Right. Now, and just to be clear, this is still TP3 at this point. There's no go live license. This is for experimentation only.
Correct. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And containers are definitely a preview feature of technical preview 3.
Right.
You know, this is the first preview, the first time they've ever been out in the wild. And so, yeah, there's a number of things that are still in process, but we wanted to get a build out there as quickly as we could to start getting some of that feedback.
Yeah, no, I'm really excited about it as well. You know, it's an interesting, it's only one small aspect of everything that's happening in Server 2016.
Oh, it's huge.
Really powerful. I mean, this is the taking virtualization to the next level.
Definitely.
So, anything we could talk about coming up next? Is it just all feedback pieces? Are we pretty much set, or are you still got a big set of features to come in the later waves?
Well, Hyper-V containers is the major one coming in the next preview.
Right.
So we've said that that'll be out later this year. So that'll be a big component of it, okay, as well as just general enhancements around containers.
And it's an interesting commitment to make two different kinds of container, essentially.
They're two sides of one coin. They're right. The same container image and the same tool set. Mm-hmm. It's just a different level of isolation around them. And we really felt like that was important for our customers, both in the development side as well as the operation side.
Right.
To have that. What we didn't want to see is people, you know, feeling like they needed to spin up a VM and just run a single container inside of it.
Yeah. Which you were seeing, and it kind of defeats the purpose.
Right. Well, we can make that so much easier for them. We can take care of spinning that VM up, starting the container inside of it. When the container finishes tearing down that VM,
right,
we can give them the better level of density and efficiency around it. You know, so we felt like that was really important.
So I don't have to write all that plumbing code anymore. It's just part of the container service.
Right. Right.
Well, Taylor, really fun to talk to you. This is exciting stuff. I'm glad we're getting to this point. It just can't come soon enough for me.
Yeah, we're super excited about it. We're really excited to see how excited the community is about it as well.
Awesome. And any place, what's the right place to reach out to you or to get more involved with what's going on here? What's the GitHub site?
We've got all of our documentation, which has got pointers off to everything, is aka.ms/windows-containers.
Awesome.
Or you can follow me on Twitter, TaylorB_MSFT.
Fantastic. Taylor Brown, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.